Welcome to Change Surfer Radio. I'm Dr. J, and for the next half hour, I'll be your guide to a sexy high-tech vision of a radically democratic future. So keep your mind open and your radio tuned to the left. The following speech by Vanessa Edwards Foster was recorded at the Transvision Conference on June 28th at Yale University in New Haven, Connecticut. The Transvision Conference was the first conference of the World Transhumanist Association held in North America. For more information about the World Transhumanist Association, go to www.transhumanism.org.
I'm pleased to introduce our next speaker, who is Vanessa Edwards Foster. Ms. Foster is a preoperative male-to-female transsexual and one of the co-founders of the current chair and the current chair of the National Transgender Advocacy Coalition, NTAC. She is also a recipient of the Baynard Rustin Civil Rights Award in 2000 by the Houston Gay and Lesbian Political Coalition, or Caucus, excuse me. Welcome.
Actually, I am approaching this not from academia so much as activism. So I tended to take a little bit of a different approach. I have been heavily involved in the transgender rights movement. The image that the public holds is very similar to what I guess they held of Frankenstein, that in essence we were something that are also creations, something other than human. Frankenstein was not very different what a lot of folks are viewing transsexual surgery. Society views this as a concoction of science and medical technology run amok. They tend to view this as science without limits, and it brings up a lot of fears. The greatest fears, of course, are the fears of the unknown. And indeed, that was the case with our monster. Obviously, I am not a monster. I've had my bolts removed, if anyone cares to see. But the fact is that if society does not understand, if they don't have a grasp on this, their fears allow them to, in essence, kind of create the image. And unfortunately, the questions of science gone too far are the things that we do need to address. Transsexual surgery was probably one of the very first movements within the transhumanism sphere. We basically were the first time that someone had taken something that was known, that was defined, and changed it to become something that all of a sudden was the opposite of what society expected. In essence, we were neither, in a lot of society's estimation, male nor female, just as our monster was considered neither non-human nor human. He was more just, I guess, what many would view as the adventure or the imagination of science, trying to discover new horizons. And in essence, we had a fabricated human being who was concocted more of parts from individuals that previously were not alive. But what we came up with was something that was not easily definable. And as a result of that, most of society at that time, or at least I shouldn't say at that time, in the movie and in the book, reacted negatively towards this. We feel a lot of that same negativity. A lot of what society views us as is in that gray middle ground that really doesn't quite fit in anywhere. And as a result of that, they don't know exactly how to deal with us. Even the movie itself showed that the creature did have an awkward humanizing towards the end of it. This was an individual that was trying to fit in, trying to find a place. And within the transgender community overall, there is a lot of isolation, a lot of questions, because of the fact that so much of the information that we need has basically, in essence, been kept from us or at least discouraged. Because of the fact that they don't, society, I should say, our parents, our peers, a lot of our instructors in school, as we're young, don't want to encourage this. It's too radical for a lot of folks. But again, this is something that we feel innately from the very earliest of ages. And it's not something that, unfortunately, we find a lot of easy answers to. We, of course, near the end of the movie, feel for the creature's condition of not quite fitting in. And really, society views transsexualism as basically science allowing individuals to harm themselves as opposed to helping themselves. They feel if we're in that middle area, that gray area, what you're doing is you're creating more problems for the individual than you're actually creating solutions. It's basically a lot of the same arguments that they use for mulattoes in the 30s and the 40s and the Jim Crow era, that any individual that was not of one specific race, if they were mixed, African-American and white, they couldn't fit in. They had no place that they could actually be defined and thus would live unhappy lives. Thus, they would be unfulfilled. But actually, a lot of the problems that they faced and a lot of the unhappiness was externally enforced. It was basically society and their reactions to the individuals that actually created a lot of the problems in their lives, unfortunately. And in essence, with us, it's the same thing. Most of our unhappiness is more externally imposed, whether it be from being kept out of careers, losing families, to some of the more, I guess, heinous aspects of this, which result in physical violence or much more negative reactions that include individuals being incarcerated because of the sensationalism of this. We have had instances of individuals that have been indeed arrested and pretty much presumed guilty because of the fact that we are those people. It's an automatic presumption of being freak. In essence, though, the individuals, once they are allowed to transition, are much, much happier. They finally feel a wholeness, a oneness with themselves. It's something innate, and it's something that's very difficult to define or explain to people other than this is how we felt from the very earliest of ages. I felt so from the age of 3. I was actually shocked at the age of 4 when my father told me that I couldn't play with the pink and the lavender butterflies because those aren't boys' colors, and boys don't play with those. I had no idea that I wasn't a boy up until that moment. And even though people might say, well, there are external factors to this, even at that age, children don't really fully realize the difference between genders or even sexuality. Those are concepts that are totally foreign. I didn't even know about sex until I was about 14. I was a very late bloomer. As far as those who repress, that is one option. But those who repress are certainly never internally happy. They're never whole. And unfortunately, even though they may fit externally society's expectations, they don't feel themselves. They basically become very, unfortunately, depressed individuals. A lot of them turn to substance abuse, or for those who react more outwardly, they may lash out at family or friends. Those who allow themselves to manifest typically into transgender people are internally happy. And with the onset of the medication, they become much more aware of all that they've been hiding. I discovered some of the hidden talents that I didn't even realize that I had had, that really I never would have come across had I not been allowed to actually recognize living as my true self, or living as I had constantly felt. The wistfulness of late onset transsexualism, I guess, are one of the drawbacks to this. But other than that, any other issues basically are going to be externally imposed upon them. They're basically going to be society or family or friends or career who negatively react to this and impact them. Surgical innovation has really allowed many to realize being able to be the people that they feel innately. And even though many of the critics have basically taken this to task, there are numerous examples of successful transitions. And they're individuals who not only retain their jobs, but are actually very contributing members of society and continue being the successes that they were once they're allowed to actually become themselves and to, in essence, retain their former lives, their former status. Sadly, for most of the folks within the transsexual community, status is one of the first things that are pretty much kind of ripped from your grasp. Let's see, the medical advancements. Initially, we really didn't have any female-to-male surgeries. That has changed over the years. We also didn't have the surgical advancements in attaching nerve endings, for instance. The innovations in surgery have really, really enhanced a lot of individuals' qualities of life. But things are actually improving for the transsexual community, although the female-to-male surgery does kind of lag behind on the technological curve. In the early years, surgery was understandably very crude, and in essence, they were the explorers of their craft. There were many more complications and a higher mortality level, but even with the inherent risks, individuals were still compelled to seek the surgery to be able to live as themselves. And these were not individuals that were, in essence, the dregs of society. Some of them, for instance, Christine Jorgensen, who was at least widely believed to be the first transsexual, albeit she was not. She was the first American transsexual, an American GI, in fact, who went had her surgery done overseas and came back to a lot of fanfare. She basically became the poster child for the transsexual movement. But, in essence, she was not the first. Roberta Cowell had actually beat her in the United Kingdom a couple of years earlier. And, indeed, Lily Elba, back in 1930, was the first actual transsexual surgery. Again, this was very crude, and there were a lot of medical complications. She did not survive the decade, but she was, indeed, the very first that we are aware of that has actually sought and achieved sexual reassignment surgery. She is our true pioneer. The techniques have improved and the innovations continue to develop. Even with other ancillary surgeries and non-surgical treatment, we still enjoy a vastly improved quality of life from 10, 20, and especially 30, 40, and 50 years ago. Now, FTM surgery is the new vista of need for these surgical advancements. Chest surgery and phalloplasty especially are lagging behind the curve. But again, we do have a lot to be optimistic about, at least from a medical standpoint. This new life has born a new self-awareness for a lot of individuals and a need for addressing the social-political disparities. Indeed, it's created a community within the transgender movement, and we are actually starting to find our voice. Though long history, we've only developed this voice over the last 4 or 5 years, and many more are actually taking the initiatives to change things in their state, local, and at least we're attempting on the federal level. Federal obviously lags behind. But we are, in essence, in the childhood of the active transgender movement. These, in essence, are the numbers of the transsexual rights attained in various jurisdictions. And you can notice here, especially within the last 4 to 5 years, there has been an extremely high trend, a high increase in the numbers of jurisdictions approaching this, as well as on the far right, the numbers of the percentage of society that are actually covered by these equal rights amendments. We're very, very optimistic, obviously, but we do have trouble looming on the horizon. We do have a lot of folks that are kind of taking us on. Primary among those is organized religion, obviously. Reverend Fred Phelps is basically the probably the loudest voice of the movement. He's certainly not the only. He's probably more caricature than actual harm, but the fact is he's basically speaking with the same voice that a lot of the others do. The Jerry Falwells of the world and many of the others are much more organized and additionally hold a lot more credibility, not only socially but politically as well. And in fact, over the years we've seen a very rapid merging of religion and politics. I've kind of coined a phrase for it, religio-politics. They're basically taking the two and kind of morphing them into one amalgamous organism. And as religion continues mixing with politics and vice versa, not only the transgender movement, but basically the sexuality movement and really the transhumanism movement faces a lot of formidable opposition. And this is going to be something that we're going to have to attend to. As long as they're able to get the message out there that we are different, that in essence we are something other than human, and as long as they can continue to objectify us, unfortunately, we're going to be facing an uphill battle, especially from a political standpoint. And a lot of what we've seen over the last year with rights, especially post 9/11, has actually been kind of shocking. The transgender movement is pretty much kind of squarely in the crosshairs, unfortunately, especially when it comes to same-sex marriage. Obviously, being the chink in that armor, they want to find ways to basically do away with us, to at least keep us from affecting things. And obviously, in the political realm, we have basically got a lot of folks that are doing their dead-level best to pass the Defense of Marriage Acts and to pass the No Same-Sex Marriage initiatives, not only federally but also statewide. And even once they get it on there, they still need to take more. They're so afraid of what they're finding here. Obviously, media plays a big portion in this as well. A lot of the media is conservative-owned, and as we just recently saw, the Senate went ahead and passed an initiative to allow more and more concentration of media into fewer and fewer hands. And as a result of that, they control the message. And that means they also kind of control the image as well. It's up to us to find ways to devise some kind of innovative fashion to get the message out there, to dispel a lot of these myths, and to dispel a lot of the fears that society has. As long as they're able to retain those fears, and as long as the conservative media, political spectrum, and also religion are allowed to basically continue to objectify us, we're in essence going to face a decreasing availability of a lot of the things that we take for granted now. It's, in essence, an issue of an individual's, I don't want to say right, but ability to self-determine. They want to take that away. It's not about being able to have the surgery that you want. It's about them deciding whether or not this is a proper surgery for you. And to me, that's the biggest intrusion that government could ever do on any individual. The courts obviously have not been a help either. As I mentioned, same-sex marriages are probably the cutting edge of what's occurring right now, especially with regards to the socio-political movement. And we've had a number of court cases, both good and bad. In Texas, we had the Christy Lee Littleton case, a post-operative transsexual that was married for 9 years. Her husband died. She filed a malpractice suit against the hospital. And they discovered that she was born a male. And in the wisdom of the appeals court judges in the 4th District of Texas, they decided that, well, once you're born male, once they place that imprimatur of gender on your birth certificate, it's indelible. You cannot change it. And it completely ignores the fact of the intersexed individuals. It completely ignores any kind of variations whatsoever. It's basically applying a black and white logic to what should be fuzzy logic, I guess, to utilize computer terminology more. Actually, even though we do have a lot of impediments We're still optimistic. We have developed much more of a voice, but the problem is that we've also stirred up a lot more ire within the political movement as well. As we've become much more visible, they've become much more adamant in their positions and much more wanting to rein back and to withhold a lot of the rights and a lot of the things that we've grown to expect in this country. Especially for the transsexual movement, it's one of the things that a lot of people are really direly fearing is that eventually we will get to a point to where they will make it impossible for us to achieve surgery, or at least here in the United States. I don't know exactly where they could go with this or how they could effectively do this, but the fact is that I've seen a number of things that have occurred over the past year that I never thought I would see. And it's occurring right now and continuing to occur. They're very brazen right now, so I don't take anything for granted. But the fact is, we can do this. Education, obviously, is the key. We have to be very, very proactive in getting the message out there, in speaking to the public, in speaking to the institutions. I've undertaken a number of presentations before university classes just to be able to deal with the psychology students and the medical students of tomorrow who will be on the front lines and who will be dealing with us, to place a human face on this. Because a lot of folks, when they hear the word transsexual, it's basically, well, man in a dress. It's like looking at Herman Munster in drag, in essence. But the fact is, anything but. We're a variation. You may find some that may actually reinforce that stereotype, but for as many as you do, you'll also find that many that basically buck that trend, that people pass by every day, that they have no clue are a part of the very people that they would want to disenfranchise. They would want to keep out of their society, their neighborhoods. And until we get to the point of actually having enough of us visibly out there speaking to this and dispelling this face-to-face, we're basically going to face a lot more work. We've got so many people, especially in politics, that still haven't gotten it. But academe is one of the areas that has. And that's probably the one area that we're most optimistic about. These are where the studies occur. We do have some studies going in the other direction. We've got our junk science, so to speak. In fact, I just recently had a book that many in the transgender community didn't deal too well with. But as long as we can find ways to make accurate information available to everyone, to where they know exactly what this is, we dispel those fears. Short of dispelling those fears, unfortunately, we're going to be facing some of the negative ramifications of this. Unfortunately, in its most heinous example, when you have religion, when you have politics, when you have the conservative media getting this message out there constantly that these people are objects, that they're not human, you basically have individuals that decide, well, if they're not human, then basically we can kill them with about as much concern as one would kill an insect. Gwen Araujo was an individual that was killed late last year in such a manner. There was virtually no humanitarian consideration whatsoever. But yet, on the flip side, we have some who actually have supportive families that are making successful transitions. Daniel Gomez is a perfect example of that. We still have a lot of the violence to deal with, and we still have to find ways to alleviate the Gwen Araujos or the Jessica Mercados, which happened here in New Haven just a couple of months ago. So many young individuals are losing their lives, but if we can get the information out there, and especially have supportive families. For instance, Danielle, who was up there just a little while ago, was one of the lucky individuals who had that. As long as we can have a supportive social structure, we can hopefully attain some of these goals. Obviously, a lot of this is basically just image-driven stuff of some of the individuals in modern day. These are some of our folks that basically defy a lot of the stereotypes. Coach Chanel, as you saw a little while ago, was one of the entertainers, but actually we've gotten beyond the realm of transsexuals as nothing but female impersonators and entertainers. We've gotten beyond the realm of being prostitutes and having very, very limited opportunities. Now suddenly individuals are finding ways to retain their jobs or to find other jobs, to become some of the entrepreneurs. And it's not just happening in the United States. Bülent Ersoy is a very good example. She's a Turkish entertainer as well as an activist there for the rights movement in, unfortunately, a very dangerous country for transgenders. And we do have female-to-males coming out in very large numbers. We basically are getting to a point to where there is enough visibility. But the fact is, just getting the visibility out there to the general public. Again, the media is of very little help to us. But the more that we can do to actually humanize this for the rest of society, the better off we're all going to be. Not just with the transgender movement, but the intersex movement, the sexual orientation movement, and transhumanism as well. There's a lot of fears out there that society has that there are no limits. And that they're unfortunately phobic of what the results may be and how this will impact them. We have to, it's incumbent upon us, it's our responsibility to get the information out, to let them know specifically what this is, where the limits are, and no, this should not be a threat to you. This is actually just a part of aiding in actually helping individuals realize a much fuller life. As individuals would not have a problem with a hair lip child, for instance, having surgery at birth, or individuals with serious injuries from a car accident having plastic surgery, those very same individuals will have problems of other individuals amending their bodies, especially if they consider it something that they find morally offensive. What we need to do is to find a way to get the message out that it's not about morals. It's about individuals being able to self-determine and to take that morality and let them know that this is not amorality. It is morality. In fact, I believe it was a little bit earlier, I had read that the human condition apparently is a moral condition as well, that an individual has an innate morality. You make a choice to detach morality, but that can be done not only by the individual, but also by the perceiver as well. We must take every opportunity to let people know exactly who we are and what we're about. I'm going to go ahead and wrap things up here in just a little bit. I do want to mention, though, that whatever you can do to put the message out there, to dispel the myths, is also needed. Even though we can get the message out, the fact is that we also need as many people to actually recognize the subject, to know the accurate information, and to also be able to do the footwork for us. It's not just one person that can do it alone. It's not just one group. In fact, as Alice Drieger had mentioned, we are very much like a support group. We basically are individuals that a lot of society would just assume do without. In essence, I don't know that I'd necessarily go as far as oppression per se, but there are some oppressive aspects to it. And in essence, we need to find as many allies as we can to bring into this, the family members, the individuals who are also affected by this, and indeed academe. Academe can be probably our biggest supporter in this, and especially from a credibility standpoint. Other than that, I guess I'm going to go ahead and wrap this up and let the rest of this just kind of tick off. I think I've got a few too many on here, but thank you very much for allowing me the opportunity to address you.
The preceding speech by Vanessa Edwards Foster was recorded at the Transvision Conference at Yale University on June 28, 2003. The Transvision Conference was the first conference of the World Transhumanist Association held in the United States. For more information about transhumanism, go to www.transhumanism.org. You've been listening to Change Surfer Radio. Change Surfer Radio is produced at WHUS Stores at the University of Connecticut. If you want to learn more about democratic transhumanism, or you want to share your thoughts about today's show with me, Dr. J, email me at jhughes, that's J-H-U-G-H-E-S, at changesurfer.com. At the Change Surfer website, you can find past and future shows archived in streaming MP3 thanks to the A-Infos Radio Project. Also, at www.changesurfer.com are instructions on how to order copies of our shows and myriad relevant links. So educate, agitate, and organize, and I hope to meet you in a sexy, high-tech, and yet radically democratic future.